6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris. I'm Chris, she's Anna, and we're here again to talk about another week of hockey where our prognostications just ain't up to snuff. But more importantly, it is an opportunity for us to excel. Anna, did you excel?
Oh, yeah. I was unaware I was holding my breath until I saw the news on Saturday morning, which... earlier than I'm usually up on a Saturday morning, than a lot of people I think are usually up on a Saturday morning, the Canucks decided to release the news that Elias Pettersson has been re-signed. So, yeah, I guess a lot of media got an early wake-up call on their day off.
Yeah, I think it might have been the boys over at Pucks on Net, maybe Rush, but could be someone else had tweeted out. Some people are scared of snakes. Some people are scared of heights. Apparently some hockey players are scared of Carolina.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, fair. I don't want to live in the South either.
Yeah. But if you hadn't heard the news, Elias Pettersson, a Vancouver Canuck for potentially 8 additional years after this one wraps up, long-term deal at a, friendly on both counts deal, which we'll talk more about as we get into the show. But as you pointed out, news was released on a Saturday morning, pretty darn early, which is kind of unusual in the sense of hockey and the Canucks and all that. I had been sleeping in. My mom had called me to advise me some plans had changed. And after the call, which is what woke me up, I checked and like, oh, hey, look. 45 seconds ago, when Canucks announced the PD deal. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting news. And, we'll have to find something else to get all worked up about for the next 8 years. Because
I'm sure we'll find
what
something.
We as Canucks fans do. Yeah. Last week, we had said the Vancouver Canucks would get 6 points. Apparently, we did not know what we were talking about, Anna.
Yeah, we're way too positive, it turns out. Mm-hmm. It's the first time for everything.
They got 3.
Yeah.
But, it was an interesting week, or maybe not a very interesting week, depending on the perspective. But you did hit the nail on the head. Our optimism was punished, which reinforces why we should be the most pessimistic Vancouver Canucks podcast there is. That's what I'm going to rebrand us as. We're the best mediocre, longest running, most pessimistic.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to be, but it turns out we have to be. We have to take one.
Yeah, because if we're not, if we're not pessimists, the team doesn't look to prove us wrong week in and week out. So we've learned our lesson. What's else going on in the course of the world of Vancouver Canucks? The trade deadline is days away. It's Friday. Mm-hmm. And so, obviously, there will be some form of movement, I would have to imagine. Substantial or not, who knows? But we do know that the league itself is starting to really ramp things up with rumors and conjecture and everything under the sun. And, hey, we're Vancouver Canucks fans. We like being in on that action. The Vancouver Canucks are obviously also going to be out on the road for a bit. Maybe that's what they need to do, is get back on the road to figure out what's wrong, because being at home didn't work. Mind you, being on the road at the end of that last trip didn't either. But, all of that and more coming right up as we dive into Rewind. It seems odd that we would be talking about a deal that happened at the end of the week before we get into the week that was, but it is by far the biggest news. We mentioned it at the top. PD has signed a deal, an 8-year extension, which is, again, that bonus year a player can be signed to. if they happen to be remaining with the team that they're re-upping with. Now, PD's AAV, so average annual value towards the cap, will be $11.6 million, which, as far as the numbers game is concerned, isn't a bad deal. That is a good number because it helps the Vancouver Canucks with cap flexibility, which they don't have a whole lot of. But also recognizes that it's amortizing the cost of the deal over the course of those 8 years by loading it up front and then getting into a more, you know, quote unquote, reasonable number, but a number that ownership doesn't have to pony up near the end. So from what I understand, he's getting like in the first 2 years, like a third of the deal.
Yeah. Something like 2.5 on the first year in terms of salary, like 12.
in 12 in the signing bonus. Yeah. 10 in the second year. He gets a full $11 million hit of base salary on year three. And then it sort of trickles down in base subsequent years with $5 million per. You know, question had come up actually. Why does Petey sign for 11.6? Shouldn't he be worth more? And yeah, arguably, I think he is. Might this have been a number that he accepted to allow the team to have flexibility so that they in turn can build a team that wins with him? Maybe. Maybe the no movement clause that was provided to him on years 2 through 8 carried with it a discount. Who knows? But something that was explained to me some time ago when it came to front-loading contracts is that some players view the value of getting all that money up front as being better because they can do stuff with that money. Like if you, let's say, take the, in the first 2 years, the, was it the $30 million of the entirety of the deal. So a third of the deal in that bit, and you invest that money, you're making interest on it that you would have otherwise not accrued. And a more sort of well-balanced deal. So there could be some value there. And again, I don't know what goes on in PD's head, and I'm not privy to the conversation. But just something to consider. It's a number that's not horrible.
Yeah. To take it to the other extreme, it's, you know, and not to get too political here, but it's very expensive being poor, right? Because instead of buying, you know, one set of $50 boots, you keep buying $15 boots over and over. And at the same time, yeah, I think it's very useful for players to have that one chunk of money rather than like drips and drabs and obviously still millions of dollars, but it is, you know, I was on the way to see my friend, when I heard about the deal, and she's a huge NBA fan and she was just like, wait, so this is a big, like, this is a huge contract. And it's less than $12 million per year.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It's pennies on the dollar compared to NBA contracts. She's like, yeah, lowest people in the league are earning like $8 million. Very different.
The, you know, pro sports salary structure is a fair bit variable in North America. I mean, internationally it is too, but like in the city's top tier leagues, which the NHL is, but the NHL is like, you know, piece of that overall pie as a very, very small slice.
That's because it's a team like Shohei Ohtani, Chris,
is probably paid as much as like the entire NHL is.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, not right now he isn't, but later in his deal.
No. Yeah. He's, what was it? They're like paying him like, you know, like 20 bucks plus per diem for the first bit. And at the end of the deal, it's like, here you go. Here's $1 billion.
Look, that was my one piece of baseball knowledge. So like we've used it up now for the whole year. Yeah. Like obviously it's a decent deal. We were thinking it was going to be over 12 million per, and it comes out as under. So that's good. Obviously PD is, to use that word, invested in where the team is going right now, and he does not want to hamper that movement in that direction, which is good. I mean, he was joking about how like he wrote it into his contract that they would pick up another player before the deadline. So, but it's like, yeah, well, they now have the opportunity to do that, as well as for other reasons that we'll go into later. But yeah. Yeah. I mean,
when it comes down to it, it's Nylander money.
Yeah.
Like, very similar AAV. It's the same length that Nylander received. And, I mean, we sort of knew once Nylander put pen to paper,
that was going to be the comparison, right? Always.
Yeah, there's our benchmark.
But we thought it was going to be, that would be, like, the lowest, rather than a model contract. But, yeah, it kind of worked out. Yeah.
Yeah, and Nylander's deal is structured in a similar way to what Petey's getting. A front-loaded deal, maybe not as significantly so, but... that just seems to be the front-loaded deal seems to be the bigger sort of or the more frequent use of big money contracts. Mm-hmm. And as I say, that JT Miller more evenly distributed, but you know, JT's only getting an AAV of like eight something.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah. The deal itself, Petey had made for all intents and purposes. Commitment to not talking deal throughout the season. Did Carolina really change that? Or was it the noise? Was it us?
The outside
that made
noise.
It happen?
I mean, I think it's probably a mixture of factors. I think it was PJ's article in The Province said the conversation started at All-Star break. But it wasn't an urgent thing for Pedersen to put pen to paper at that point. But, like, I can't imagine that when the Canucks came to Pedersen and said, you know, if you're really not going to stay, we're going to have to consider a deal here. Like, they know what they're doing, right, with that. Like, whether Pedersen thought, let's just get it out of the way to... And so we can move on to playoffs and those discussions. But it's hard. Like, you can say that you don't hear the outside noise, and like, he did joke about that in the press conference, but like, it's Vancouver's a small town and it's a passionate town, and at some point when the team isn't playing well, as they haven't been this week, that noise is only going to amplify, and at some point it does become detrimental to the team. I'm not going to, like, blame Pedersen for the poor performances or anything, but, yeah, it comes a point where it's just easier if you know you're going to get there in the end to sit down and have that discussion now.
Yeah, and I maybe should mention it, and again, in case some of our listeners weren't aware of this, on Feb 29, Elliot Friedman shared, because, you know, it's a leap year, why not, the news that Vancouver had serious enough conversations with the Carolina Hurricanes regarding a deal involving Elias Pettersson that they had to sit down and consider whether or not they had a future, and apparently had taken that sort of high-level thought process to the player and agent. So it's why we sort of suggest, is it possible that Petey being distributed elsewhere as being, you know, something that wasn't really in his mind going into negotiations or non-negotiations. If, though, you know, as was reported, the conversation had started more in earnest come All-Star break. I mean, I don't think it was clearly said as to when the Vancouver Carolina conversation had been happening either. It's just an interesting development. Someone was telling me, like, well, why would they trade Petey? I don't think the team would want to, but they also didn't want to get themselves in a situation where they ultimately have to sign a short-term deal that sees Petey go to free agency and peace out elsewhere.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they probably don't get as much as they would get for an unsigned Petey without that team actually having a commitment from the player. But, you know, it's all moot. Petey's a Canuck. From now until he decides the no movement clause doesn't need to be upheld. And let's hope that that never becomes an issue, because his play remains, you know, top tier. I think time will tell us as to how this deal will ultimately work out in the context of sort of the bigger picture. The Vancouver Canucks have arguably spent the cap increase that's going to happen at the end of the season or into next season. They still have holes that they'll need to fill. Like, for instance, Hronek's deal is coming due. Lindholm is a player who's right now a rental until otherwise, you know, determined to be something else.
The blue line, we're looking at Hughes and Jolson right now, looking into next season.
So, you know, and where will the Vancouver Canucks look to, you know, fill those holes? The depth, I'm not saying it's necessarily lacking, but I think there are significant enough question marks about internal depth to say, not sure if they've got all the answers there. If they go into free agency, that's always expensive, and cap space still remains a premium for the Vancouver Canucks for at least a few more seasons until, again, that number goes up. It begs the question that, you know, you've sort of put out one fire, but in doing so, the other ones that you've sort of ignored, you may not have enough fire retardant available to you to sort things out.
I just love the metaphor that we got to, like, use the phrase fire retardant in an episode. So, yeah. Okay.
That's what I'm here for. That's why you pay me the big bucks.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely something I do.
Yeah. But PD deal is done. How did PD play this week?
I mean,
but in fairness,
yeah,
he wasn't the only one.
Yeah. And in fairness, on one of his wings is Ilya Mikheyev. So, yes, it's not been a stellar week for the Canucks. I guess we'll start with the Pittsburgh game. It's not like losing for, like, in overtime to an Eastern team is the worst thing in the world. It's losing, giving up a 2-0 lead to a, like, do we want to say nosediving Pittsburgh Penguins?
Well, I don't know if they're nosediving, but they're currently on the slow glide downward.
Yeah. I mean, if we're looking at tonight's, that being Sunday's,
not there yet. Bug.
Yeah. Like, they are nosediving now if they weren't, early this week. But yeah, it's just like to another lead that they're giving up.
Yeah, we talked about this last week when, you know, the Canucks had been on the road where we were sort of seeing an effort where they come out for a period and then sort of, you know, foot off the gas. And that's what it felt like to me occurred yet again. The team proceeded to go into the intermission and come to the conclusion that the game was done or that this was easier, that they had it in the bag. They did not. You know, when you have a player like Rickard Rakell, like, there's really only so much you can do to, you know, contain him.
Yeah. League superstar. Yeah, it was just like, it's such a cliche to be like 60-minute effort, you know, but it's true. Like, there's just such noticeable, like, drops in play between periods. It's just like they check out or something, and that's not going to work in the postseason for sure.
I have to also point out that the first goal, which was galling. The first goal from Mikel, there was a check out of the team. They did wake up. The problem is that discipline has been an ongoing issue, and it does become an issue again. You have a tripping call on Zadorov, which, yeah, that's a trip. But to then subsequently have on the opening faceoff a high stick that then puts you down for two men for essentially 2 minutes, that's not how you win games. And, you know, the subsequent goal that was scored, again, by Rakell to, at that point, tie things up, really shifted momentum. One could argue that the shorthanded goal that comes from Miller as the Vancouver Canucks continue to try to kill off that, you know, Myers-sized sticking call came against the grain of the game at that point, or against the flow of play.
Yeah.
But you didn't go into the second period with the Vancouver Canucks up by one, feeling the same way that you did when they were up by two. Like, that was like, oh my goodness, are they going to be able to hold on? Whereas in the first intermission, it was like, oh, the Vancouver, you know, like, even as fans, I think we could say, yeah, the Vancouver Canucks look good.
Yeah. And, but the thing is, like, the JT Miller against the Green goal, one, what a special moment, like, amazing mm-hmm. goal. And that gets the crowd back into it. That's for sure, even if JT Miller, quote unquote, couldn't hear them chanting his name. So, all right. But that's the kind of things you need. You know, you need to be able to get back into a game when you're behind the eight ball. But that's almost like a gift that JT Miller gave the team. And then, yeah. It just wasn't followed through, I guess.
Yeah. Third period, there was a whole lot of hold on. The problem is that hold on only lasts for so long. Lars Eller scores, ties it up. And at that point, it almost felt that the Vancouver Canucks and the Penguins were going to overtime. you know, we've seen when the Canucks were on their game, a goal like that almost reinvigorates them. We've seen glimpses of it even in this slump where when they fall behind, suddenly they become a little bit more inspired. There was really no inspiration here. And when it went to OT, I don't know what kind of decision-making was being made, but I think it was Brock Besser, instead of going on the defensive approach, mm-hmm. he presumed the puck would be held in and turned towards the Penguin net. The puck was not held in, but in doing so, you have a definitive odd man rush. And
yeah, which, like, it wasn't a great look, that OT as a whole, but it's kind of like what we said is that the game should have been won already, like, and we'll mm-hmm. see that come to fruition later in the week as well, where Canucks have the dominance, they have the pressure, but no goal to show for it. And then,
yeah, like, no results.
Yeah, it's like, you can, if you're only one goal up, that's not a, you know, done deal. Like, there needs to be that sort of, let's lock this game down.
Yeah, so the Canucks take the loser point. But that said, you mentioned it earlier on, Eastern opponent. Really, if you give up the extra point to them, not the end of the world. Though the way this game transpired feels a little bit worse than had the Vancouver Canucks been the team to fight their way back into it, only to give up that 2 points. Brings us to the game against the Los Angeles Kings. And the Vancouver Canucks look like they played a better game of hockey. But I don't know. How do you describe the outcome? Like,
well, as someone there who was there witnessing it, I just, like, to me,
like, it wasn't, it was boring. It was like,
yeah, it was bad.
Low event hockey.
That's the thing. It wasn't even like, oh, LA is just putting on a clinic here. Like, that's, you know, too bad, but Canuck, like, what impressive showing. Given the scoreline, that's what you would expect. But no, like, it mm-hmm. was just, like, what started out as just, like, very boring, barely called that hockey game. And then, yeah, like, then Canuck sort of resurrected themselves slightly and then lay back down again.
Yeah, but when I describe arguably a better game, there were fewer mistakes. Like, the Vancouver Canucks, they weren't taking chances.
No.
And that's
repeated issue that we're seeing.
Yeah. And not to suggest LA was taking chances, but, you know, to be down, 2-0 after two, the way the game was, that's, to me, it should have been 0-0.
Yeah.
Neither team had played well enough to actually have scored goals, but for some reason or another, the Kings got two of them. Your point is that the Vancouver Canucks kind of redeeming themselves. Yeah, they did so somewhat early in the third period when Besser scores his goal. The building gets some buzz, apparently, as we've been told. It's a quiet barn, and to help quiet things down, the Vancouver Canucks were kind enough to allow LA to score a power play marker only, what, a minute and a half after the Besser goal to really, really dull in the mood. And then from that point onward, it was just I don't want to really say it, but I will. A game where it seemed like Vancouver was like, well, this one's done. Let's get our way to California. The weather here sucks.
Yeah, like, we're following you out. Let's get the heck out of here. Yeah, and honestly, it was definitely not a great watching experience, compounded by the fact that it was also country night at Rogers Arena. Luckily, the DJ doesn't really know what country music is, so that was...
Did the DJ play the new Beyonce track?
No, not even.
Interesting, because first of all...
Unless I missed it.
Beyonce, that's country. Now, I'm not a country fan. If you were to say I'm a big country fan and I don't feel it's country enough, I guess I have to defer to that, but really, at the end of the day, it's a country track.
Yeah.
That said, I'm genuinely surprised because you would think... It being currently part of the, you know, pop culture meta.
And maybe it happened while
it's country night, you're going to play it.
I was in the washroom, but yeah. Literally, we're like halfway through the first, and he's already like resorting to playing Avicii, which.
Total country artist right there.
I love Avicii, so I wasn't mad about it.
I'm not knocking Avicii in the sense of Avicii. I'm just like,
but
if it's country night, that's the type of track I'd totally think.
It was just basically the DJ playing the few country songs that I've heard of, which are like major hits and giving up on anything else. They did have a live performance from a local country star, so I guess that's something. But yeah, luckily we went to... So, yeah, we didn't have to deal with too much country music.
I would ask you, what was the country jersey, but... Like, country night? What type of... was the country jersey?
Oh, I see. Like, they would have a special night for that. Yeah.
I mean, it's the NHL. That would be perfectly fine. So, yeah, Vancouver Canucks lose 5-1. Lackluster effort. In the post-game press conference, Tockett was asked, and he had sort of inferred that some guys needed the day off that they were getting the following day. He's like, we got a day off tomorrow, and some of the guys, they need it. And if they're tired, and I can accept the tired part. Yeah,
I mean...
How long are you tired for?
That's the thing. We're 60-plus games into the season, sure. But, like, you're in the middle of a homestand. Like you... just spent the last 5 days at home, whatever. Like, also, maybe they'd be less tired if you stopped playing your star goalie every single game. That's just an idea I had.
Okay, well, let's talk about the game tonight, which I missed. Complete mea culpa on my part. I was dealing with customer service issues. Long story short, I'm trying to switch my phone over to a provider that only provides online support. And at one point in time, as I'm going back and forth through, and it's like a ticket system, it's not even live chat. The agent's like, you have to trust me. I'm the expert here. And so when I was describing to my wife this, she's like, oh, I know how that probably made you get.
Yeah, you don't seem like you deal with that well.
Well, so when I worked for one of the telecom companies in the training department, part of sort of the training program was customer service, customer experience, overcoming customer objections, things of that sort. But there's a role play component, and I would always play the role of the customer. After one of these role play sessions, one of the other, you know, students in the classroom had said, you know, if you can role play with Chris as the customer, you can handle any customer that were to ever call in.
Did you really embrace your role as belligerent customer?
Well, no, see, I can, but in most cases, I will do the opposite, is I will be the type of customer that remains calm, but ultimately takes what you say and continues to repurpose that information. And it's hard for me not to then fall into those habits when I start dealing with customer service agents. Like, I know we're off the rails here, so for that, I apologize. But when you provide a customer service experience, as long as at no point in time I feel like you are either showing me disrespect or blatantly disrespecting me, you're going to get the benefit of the doubt. I simply understand that there is a conversation taking place. I will be respectful and I'm not going to call you out. Because again, I worked in that space. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like. But you can't discount that experience or put yourself into a position where you're going to be, I'm right, you're wrong. That may be true, but at the end of the day, I am the consumer. I hold all the cards. Yeah.
I know. And I'm just like, as a woman who partly works in operations, like sometimes when you're dealing with vendors, it's just super frustrating when you just get, oh, well, like you must be wrong on this perspective. And it's just like, I'm actually not very knowledgeable about practical stuff, but when you're discounting the experience I'm describing to you, or like what I see with my own eyes, this isn't about expertise. You're just saying you don't believe me.
Yeah. It's, I think the worst sort of interaction I had from a customer experience perspective was actually not one that directly involved me. I happened to simply be with my wife when she was talking to a service provider, and I don't need to fight my wife's battles, but Lord help someone if they go and disparage her or really anyone of my family. Like, yeah. I'm, you know, there's sort of a line that does not get crossed. And at that point I'm like, excuse me, what did you just say to her? And then they made the mistake of repeating it verbatim as if that's I didn't hear. And again, go back to training. I ask that question of all of the trainees. When someone says, excuse me, what did you just say? Are they truly asking for you to repeat yourself?
The audacity of that person. That's wild.
Right? That is a good indication to you that their interpretation of what you've just said or what they feel you have said has crossed a personal boundary of some sort. Think back to what you might have said and immediately take, hey, you know what, based on your reply, I've said something, I've done something, I need to remedy that.
Yeah.
Like, you take ownership, you've said it. Yeah. You can't take that back. But yeah, when they repeated themselves to me, oh, it went downhill from there. And when we left, my wife's like, you know, it's not fair that they have to deal with you, because like, I would be in tears and I'm surprised they're not. I'm like, I always feel bad about it, 'cause I'm like, yeah, they probably are crying right now and I'm the one who caused it. And again, I don't come across as aggressive. I don't raise my voice.
Yeah. I mean, like anyone that's met Chris will know he's a very calm guy. Most of the time.
I don't get belligerent.
Yeah.
But it's like the, as I describe it, it's the quiet angry.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, Liam Neeson, I'm not a very rich man, but I have a particular set of skills.
Well, yeah, I mean, last time we met up, I was the one doing the yelling, not at you, but at belligerent people. So, yeah. Anyway.
Anyhow. Back on the Vancouver Canucks. They went down into Anaheim, which if there was a team in the NHL to provide the elixir to fix what's wrong, the Mighty Ducks, who are not so mighty, might be it.
Yeah. And we said we were going to come back to that problem of dominance not showing up on the score sheet. Here it was again. Canucks won 2-1, but it wasn't a pretty 2-1. Like, you should...
Hey, they don't paint or draw it up on the score sheet. 2 points is 2 points.
You're absolutely right.
That's right.
And despite the Ducks having a huge amount of possession in the last few minutes, they actually didn't get that close to scoring. Whether they forgot that that's what they had to do or forgot who was up in the game, who knows. But yeah, it was a case again of Canucks were dominant in the game, but they were one goal up. And that just opens you up to just, well, like...
You know, looking at a very small sample size, they were dominant in the first period. Yes. Like, absolutely dominant in the first period. 1-1.
Yep. And that's the thing. It's just like you just open yourself up to being like one bad bounce away from a tie game. Two bad bounces away or a bad call away. Because once again, the officiating left something to be desired. But you don't want to put yourself in that position where the one bad ref call can like take away a game that you have dominated in.
Yeah. Going into the game, the Vancouver Canucks had previously announced a couple of players being called up. Irwin, veteran of the AHL, on his way into Vancouver, not into Vancouver, but in Anaheim. But also joining him, Pod Colson.
Yeah, who had himself a pretty good game, considering the amount of time he's been out of the NHL. He didn't look like he'd missed a step at all. The effort was there. He was chasing down pucks, keeping pucks in the zone, making controlled entries. So, yeah, I think he had a really good and promising game. And I thought it might take him a bit more time to adjust.
Yeah. I think it was, yeah. I don't know if it was Drantz or Wagner had shared some of his fancy stats. And his statistics measured to a very capable NHL player. And his time on ice was very reasonable. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you were to say, okay, his numbers were great, but his time on ice was low, you know, small sample size. Is this a showcase of Pods, or is this a show me what you got of Pods?
It's hard to say, because you do think from the point of view of teams, other NHL teams, you like, don't you think they can see through stuff like that when you call a guy up? But then it's just like, if he does a good job, he does a good job. Like, you can't.
Vancouver Canucks that. Found a team to take Cody Hodgson off their hands.
Yeah, hey.
Speaking of Cody, apparently he's trying to make a comeback.
Yeah, eh? I mean, he's playing in he's playing in the AHL right now for Milwaukee, I want to say.
Something like that. And what we've since learned is he had some serious medical issues that actually, you know, were detrimental to his health, obviously, but also his game. And I don't want to discount the fact that it was quite clear that there was something more going on, and we used to poke fun at it. But at the time...
And also
the information we got that he was a player, and then like in the last season of the Vancouver Canucks with sheltered minutes, he looked real good.
Yeah. And but let's be honest too, there was a like disconnect in terms of attitude and expectations with Cody Hodgson. So yeah, good for him. I hope it works out for him. Like, it really takes a lot of courage to make your way back into the pro game at this point in time. So
yeah. Do you think Matt Irwin finds his way into the the game day lineup?
Unless we see another injury, I don't necessarily think so. Although it's kind of clear to me that that Mark Friedman doesn't have a lot of leeway / trust with Tockett, even though he spoke well of Mark Friedman when he stepped into the lineup last time. So you never know. Matt Irwin has a really, really good reputation amongst his teammates in Amherst, but they only have the best thing to say about he's the hardest worker, like, best pro. So, I would like to see it, but I think he might be more insurance than anything.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why he has been called up is the fact that Tyler Myers is currently on... is he day-to-day? I don't think
no,
he's
it's
on
week
the
to
IR.
Week. Yeah, so...
Oh, it's week-to-week. Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, peace be with you, Tyler Myers. Take all the time you need. Maybe till the end of the season when the cap stops counting.
And I guess, you know, in unrelated news, Archdeep Baines was sent back down to Abbotsford, having got a relatively extended look, I think.
Yeah, and I think...
For what was expected of him.
Yeah, and he did decently in that look, so I think, yeah, maybe he's not done quite done cooking down there in the AHL, but he's done well in a limited selection there.
Yeah. Anyhow, as we look ahead the week that we'll be, Vancouver stays in California for a game against the LA Kings Tuesday night. They then take on the Golden Knights on Thursday, and then they come back home to take on the Winnipeg Jets in a Hockey Night in Canada matchup. This being the second in what, 3 weeks, I want to say, with the Jets on a Saturday night. They lost the last one. Are we at all optimistic of these three games? Like, prior to the week that was, I would have said they win in LA, they lose in Vegas, and then they win at home against Winnipeg.
Now I think they beat Vegas.
Really?
Yeah, Vegas.
What? Lose, win, lose, win, lose, lose, win, lose, win. What?
That's making me dizzy.
I know.
Yeah, like Vegas on. Doing so hot, or as hot as they were. So, you've got to think that, like, from an optics perspective, this LA game should be, like, an important one to win. Do they actually do it, though? Not looking like they did against Anaheim, I'd say that. Like, LA still have enough firepower that that kind of performance wouldn't get them through. You wouldn't think.
So, are they going to win or are they going to lose?
How many points?
Yeah, how many points? Here, I'll make it easier. How many points? And we'll just distribute them, you know, accordingly.
Three?
I was going to say 3 points.
Where did they? I think it might be lose, win, lose in overtime. If I had to pick.
Okay, so yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. They'll lose in LA, they'll win in Vegas, and then they'll lose in overtime against the Jets. 3 points, yeah.
See, we don't want to be pessimistic, but we have to.
Yeah. Just, again, a glance ahead at the rest of the schedule. The Vancouver Canucks will be at home for the remainder of March. They actually don't have another road trip until the start of April, and then they're sort of back and forth before they get into to playoff action. What is important to note is the trade deadline happens on Friday the 8th. So if any deals were to go down, what we see in Vancouver on that Saturday night against the Winnipeg Jets could be a somewhat different roster. Who knows? But one thing that will be staying the same is this podcast, because we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to get into stuff and things. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
I mean, we kind of touched on it at the end of our rewind segment, but leading off half full, half empty is good old Tyler Myers, Chaos Giraffe incarnate. His injury, as it stands, has put the Vancouver Canucks into an interesting position from a cap perspective. I mean, as we have talked about ad nauseum on the show, Tyler Myers makes good money. Hit on the season, $6 million. Right now, he remains injured, but on the cap. He's not yet been bumped into LTIR, which would then give the Vancouver Canucks some additional relief. If his injury is week to week or weeks to weeks, it may make sense to go on to LTIR and, you know, potentially take whatever time is needed to recover, which could be, you know, April. If his cap hit comes off, it does provide the Vancouver Canucks much needed space to potentially put to use come Friday. Not that Vancouver would go and do any such thing. They only have 2.6 million right now in space to dance with. They do have, however, a roster of 23, which does require either someone to go LTIR or people to go down. Going down, not an issue. They've got two they can send, mm-hmm. Or in this case, send back. But how do the Vancouver Canucks approach Tyler?
Well, maybe just swap like for like, a Tyler for Tyler. Tyler Toffoli has been a name floating around. Obviously, he's kind of the one that got away. In that, yeah, he played very well for the Canucks. For his short stint here.
Did he truly get away? Like,
yeah,
we talk about it as fans. Well, no, okay, but we talk about it as fans because of what he signed for in Montreal, and we're like,
oh, well, we could have paid that.
But to be allowed to get away, it would require the organization to have desired him to stay.
Well, yeah, he's the one that got away from the team rather than, like, the organization. The organization sort of said, if you love something, set it free.
Yeah, I don't know if they – but that's the thing is, I don't know if they loved it so much, but they definitely – set it free. I mean, that off season was all sorts of weird.
Oh god, yeah. I mean, the Chris Tanev, who now is, you know, off the market, having been
in Dallas
traded in a triangular trade to Dallas.
Lots of these three-way deals that are like, why was the third team needed?
I know, sometimes it's just like seems like money laundering at a certain point. That you're just thinking, well, what are they doing? They're just cleaning the money. Or is it just, like balancing the books here? But, yeah, so Chris Tanev, a casualty of that offseason, also, no longer an option. I don't think Troy from Richmond is coming back anytime soon either, but Tyler Toffoli is a name that's been talked about. But he can still play. And
so, can he play on the blue line?
He could try. Like, I wouldn't put it past him.
I've heard the same thing about Toffoli possibly coming back to Vancouver. And hey, you can never have too much depth up front, especially from a player like Toffoli who still's got game.
Yeah.
But I have to say that the Vancouver Canucks blue line is still the area of concern and the one that they should probably be sorting out first.
Yeah, I guess it's just like you look. There is definitely a, scoring issue with the team. Like,
sure.
Compared to earlier in the season, they're not getting the goals they were. Pedersen is playing with one player who's playing lights out, and another player who is an anchor.
So there's a player who's playing lights out, and then there's a player who's playing without lights. Got it.
That was good. Yeah. It's very true. So, like, you would think that, I don't know, I feel like they're gonna, if they have to choose, and you would think for, what is it, they're playing with
change.
But, like, if Tomas, that's $6 million, That's also
that's the big thing,
Jake Guentzel makes, so. That was another player. Like,
if the Myers contract comes off the books, right? Like, they arguably have more room in their cap than the bulk of the teams that they'll likely be buying against. Now, the other caveat to this is it's one thing to have the cap space. It's another thing to have the assets as to which you're willing to part with that will get you the player or players you want. And when I look at the Vancouver Canucks roster, I kind of wonder if maybe that could be the holdup. Like, in years past when you didn't necessarily have the assets you were willing to part with from a player perspective, you'd probably deal your picks. And hey, the Vancouver Canucks don't have so many of those top picks next year or in this upcoming draft. And as you start to look down the line, they do have others they could start to dispense with. But then at what point in time does that become a concern? Like, I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but this is a surprising year, as I have said many times this season. Mm-hmm. I'd like to maybe have another season or two of this type of action before I get on board with the, hey, I don't have so much concern about the draft picks no more.
Right. But at the same time, we're looking down the barrel of a weak draft. I'm not saying give up all the picks, but this is certainly like Canucks don't have any good picks to sort of play with anyway. And it's just like there's some players that have some value still. Podkolzin obviously isn't the player he like was, doesn't have the same value, but like games like today would certainly help.
Does Pods get you Toffoli?
I mean, it's Pods plus, obviously. Like,
What plus? Like, what's the plus? Like, that's I don't know how many pluses.
Yeah,
are available?
Can we interest anyone in a lightly used Phil DiGiuseppe? Maybe. Anils Armon before Oman, sorry. Any of those? Like, there is a... You know, they're not touching the sort of third line that they have built, but there's lots of sort of spare parts that might be, available. Like you, I am concerned about the blue line, but my instinct is that they're going to try and find an extra scoring piece.
Okay.
We'll see.
I'm not against the idea, right? It just, there are still many question marks, and I can completely get you can only answer maybe one or two of them at most. Which ones will give you the biggest bang? There's probably less likelihood that you're going to be able to answer the blue line question sufficiently for the playoffs, but get, some additional depth, a player with some pedigree to potentially help out a guy who recently signed a big deal, get his mojo back. Sure. The other topic that you put in the rundown is that we wanted to get into was the workload of the Vancouver Canucks starting a goaltender. So as we've mentioned many, many times, for the Vancouver Canucks to perform well, they required a goaltender who would stand on his head and then some. Mm. And arguably, Thatcher Demko has done just about that. So he has started 46 games this season. He has actually performed very well in those 46 starts. He's got 31 wins. DeSmith has started 17 and has been put into one game where Demko was given the hook. Mm.
And
you are telling me you're concerned that Demko is playing too much?
I would say so. And I understand what you're saying in the Casey DeSmith has been okay. He looked mainly good today. There were still some worrying moments, but like mainly good. But like he's played three times since the All-Star break, started three games mm-hmm. since the All-Star break. Like in terms of longevity, when we're looking down the barrel of, we aren't done in April. Like we're hoping that the season goes on another month or two after that. And a player with Thatcher Demko's injuries and a player who's had to like be depended on as the star player for like much of his career. He's kind of been the backstop, like keeping Canucks afloat for the last few seasons. And I get that like he's having a great season. I want that to continue. And I'm not saying, like, you know, give Casey DeSmith all the starts. What I would just like to see is more of a balance going down the stretch. Like, yeah.
Okay. Your reasoning is sound. But then, you know, we also have to address that the Vancouver Canucks, within their construct, require that goaltender to stand on their head. DeSmith is not the goaltender who will be standing on his head. Are we willing to accept that the Vancouver Canucks may lose a few more, looking at the bigger picture, that you have a healthier Thatcher Demko for the playoffs? The potential of, you know, losing a few more, when we look at the standings from a divisional and a conference perspective, is that the Vancouver Canucks have only a little room ahead of a team like the Oilers, when we think of the Pacific Division. But when we think in regards to the conference, they're essentially, you know, 2 points up on a Winnipeg Jets team that has three games in hand. So,
yeah,
you know, we start to see the potential of that home ice advantage being lost in rounds 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Presuming the Canucks get there, and maybe I'm getting way ahead of myself because we chose to sit a goaltender a few extra games. Like, you know, I would be more in line with the theory if DeSmith's save percentage was 900 and up.
Yeah.
I mean, he's .898. He's not that far off. But the guy has won only 8 of his 17 starts. He has been in the net for 5 of the 7 overtime losses. Like,
you're right. But to me, I'm thinking it's also one feeds into the other. No, that, like, the gaps between starts don't necessarily help a goaltender.
Agreed. And, yeah, I mean, like, you're right. He's not being given any help there.
Like, that is the life of the backup. But, like, if we're in the, like, we're in the playoffs and, God forbid, Demko gets an injury, like, we don't want to, like, be starting a goalie that's started 20 games, like, in the whole season. That's, like, really terrifying. And I do think, like, the lead that the Canucks have built up, yes, it's much slimmer than it was, but, like, that affords you at least a few more games than otherwise. But I do think, like, there's been some games where the Canucks have not played well in front of Demko, thinking back to this week.
So there's 19 games left, I think, if my math serves me correct. They have won back-to-back, so you
obviously
can probably be assured of at least a DeSmith start in one of those two games. So that brings us down to 17. How many of those remaining 17 games does DeSmith start in your mind in a world where Thatcher gets some rest?
I'd like to see him start. Not maybe 7. Like, that's a lot of
7
games.
7 out of 17.
But, okay, like, that's still less than half. Yeah. And, like, so, I would never want a half and half split of a goalie. Like, even in a 1A, 1B situation, I'm skeptical of that. But, like, we're looking at the dog end of the season. 7 is probably too much, but I'd like to see him get at least 4, maybe 5 of those games.
Okay. I mean, when we look at the schedule, if we were to guess where starts would occur, like, the Vancouver Canucks have a nooner at home at the end of the month, playing the Ducks.
Yeah.
To me?
Yeah.
That's a DeSmith game.
That's so, like,
there's one.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I mean, they've got an earlier start at home, 6 o'clock on a Monday night against the Kings, maybe. I mean, that would be, you know, 2 games in a week there if you were to do that. But, you know, is it the home game against the Sabres on the 19th? I mean, because, again, I'm, like, looking at competition, you've got, presuming he doesn't start again on this road trip, right?
Yeah.
And I can't see DeSmith starting against the Jets. You've got the Avs at home, the Caps at home, the Sabres, the Habs, the Flames, the Kings, the Stars, the Ducks. That's just to wind down March. Then we're on the road. That's the Vegas Coyotes back-to-back. You've got the Kings on the road. Vegas at home. Coyotes at home. I think that Coyotes game at home could be a start, mm-hmm. right? If you're going to sort of expect what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Oilers away, Flames at home, Jets away.
Yeah, and you, like, obviously this is going to be a thing of responding to Canucks performances. Like, if the form does not resurrect itself, it doesn't make sense to keep mm-hmm. bumping up dismissed starts. It really, yeah. We'll have to see how it goes, but yeah, I just think it's really not worth the risk to Demko, because it's a cumulative thing, right? It's not a case of, clearly, like we were just talking about, Rick Tocchet says, like, people need the day off in the weather and they're in the middle of a homestand there. You know, it's like, it's not like he gets one game off and then he's reset again. Like, he's better and he's, like, not putting a tired body or a sore body through another game. But yeah, I just think, like, they haven't played an off season in a while. The bubble aside, because what a weird time. But, like, this season's going to be a lot longer for Thatcher Demko than he's had to deal with in a long time. So I think we just should be cognizant of that.
Okay. Well, if we were to consider, like, the current workload as is and sort of how it's been distributed, then the potential of four games would give DeSmith the same sort of percentage as to his, what he's played so far. If you were to go and sort of extrapolate that a little bit further, he would be playing approximately 21 games in the season. He's played 17.
Yeah, no, I want them. I want more than that. I want a goalie, backup goalie, to take more than that.
Well, I mean, it would have been better to have done it already, as opposed to all at once.
I agree with you. I agree with you, but yeah.
And I think that's where my concern is, is if we're talking about doing this to play catch-up, I'm not entirely sure this is where they want to start catching up. And, you know, it could be that, oh, they've got things locked up. Well, if they've got things locked up, and presuming sort of the standings remain very similar to where they are today, they've got a game against the Oilers and a game against the Jets to close out the season. Those are two games that could still mean quite a bit when it comes to these three teams and where they are positioned. You've got a game against the Vegas Golden Knights in that sort of final 2 weeks. You've got too many teams that are still in the mix.
Right.
So, there's a lot to still play for.
I agree, but I think they need to capitalize on the games that are, one, more winnable, and two, like, less significant, in terms of divisional opponents there. But yeah, I agree that we shouldn't really be where we are now, but we are.
Yeah. Well, speaking of being where we are, we're at the end of the show, Anna. It's been over an hour. We've been hanging out. I've talked about how I can make customer service agents cry. If anyone were to take anything from our episode today, that probably will be it. Got any final words of wisdom or deep thoughts for our listeners this week?
I don't think it's wisdom. I think it's a very obvious thing to say, but, like, I am just enjoying so much watching Nils Höglander play, like, won the season, but, like, especially lately, him and Petey look so happy playing together. Long may it continue. He's just a joy to watch on the ice, so I hope it stays that way.
Yeah, I don't have any, you know, big wisdom to share, but I did read a joke on the signboard at the Accent Inn in Richmond that I felt the need to share. What do stars and false teeth have in common?
I don't know, Chris. What do stars and false teeth have in common?
They both come out at night. I'm here all week.
Yep.
Tip your server.
Exactly. Well, anyway.
Well, if you enjoyed that joke, or better yet, if you didn't, support the show by following us on social media. We're on many of them. We're at the C4 Podcast on most, except for Threads, where we're at the real C4 Podcast. You can join our Discord, discord.io/C4Podcast. And if you are so inclined, you can chip a few bucks our way, either on a one-off basis, monthly or annual basis, by supporting us by going to support.c4podcast.com, which will forward you off to Buy Me a Coffee, or as Anne and I like to call it,
Buy Me a Pint.
And from there, again, you can throw some money our way that either, one, buys us a pint or two when we get together, and two, allows for us to pay the bills to keep the show going, whether it be paying for the platform we use to record each and every week, the hosting fees and what have you. It's not that it's stupid expensive. It's not. It's just that these costs do add up. And at some point in time, it could reach the point where, you know, life throws both of us a curveball and we're in a position where the show either goes on or it doesn't. So your support helps us keep things going. But on behalf of Anna, A4Size03, myself, Chris at Light Force, I'm going to sign off this week's episode like I do. But before doing so, we're actually going to record a day early next week. So you've been warned. We out.